It's certainly good to see everyone this morning. It's always wonderful to have an opportunity to come together for the purpose of worshiping God and singing praise to His name. Hear a portion of His word preached, and we're glad that you're here. I want to just note a couple of things by way of our study this morning. We're going to be in the book of Ruth, if you'd like to be turning there. And I'd just like to introduce our study by noting that I greatly enjoy studying the Bible with just about anyone who's willing to study with me. But as a result of being a preacher, sometimes the individuals who come to me are fairly narrow in scope with regard to their views. For example, if someone were to come to our congregation and desire a study, we would know from that they would have an interest in God and in spiritual matters, something that has compelled them to come and to ask for perhaps guidance or to discuss God's word with another. And as a result of that, at the very most, if there are disagreements, there will be a foundational basis, the existence of God, perhaps the Messiahship of Jesus as Christ, where we would have a beginning place to begin our study. Secondly, because I am a preacher, external contacts are fairly limited with regard to friends, with regard to family, those that I invite that are willing to study. Typically, someone who's willing to study with you, when you approach them, it's basically the same thing. They have some interest in spiritual matters, and perhaps at least a modicum of faith in God and in Christ, or else they're really not interested in taking the time to study with you. But just for the last several months, I've had an opportunity to study with a group, one of which in that group is one who does not believe that God exists, or does not have that understanding, that faith, and certainly because of his background, cultural background, his upbringing, does not believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And we've been studying together, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for a number of reasons. One is that I get to talk to someone with a very markedly different point of view with regard to how the world works and how the world came to be. And that individual has a pleasant personality, and so we've been able to discuss these things without rancor, which again is something that is fairly difficult if you have someone who is so markedly different than you in faith and in belief. And so I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together in our studies. And this past week, a remark was made by him as we were studying together, and he noted that he wasn't there yet in the belief in God and belief that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. In fact, he's told me on several occasions he's not sure he'll ever get there. But he's thoroughly enjoying our studies, and it was obvious to him that the Christian lifestyle, the way that Christians live, was perhaps the best one that there could be. He said it's something that is obvious as you describe these things, and he's very complimentary of me personally, which is irrelevant. But that, but he, in the way that I speak with him, and our good spirits and friendliness as we talk together, is something that has had an effect on him, and he has basically indicated that such a life is obvious, a life without hatred, one where anger is not common. One where people treat each other well, like they probably should in order to get along. And he said, even if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, if you live that way, that's probably the best way to live. And I thought that was kind of an interesting point. I didn't want to dissuade him from the view that Christians live that way, although we do know that we're imperfect. And often we fail to live up to the standards that God has established for us. But there is indeed a standard that has been established by God that we are to seek to hold to. And if we do so, it is truly the best way to live our lives. And of course, we have that added bonus, the greatest bonus of all, and that is Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And because of that, those who live in such a way will spend an eternity in the presence of God. So it's not only the best way to live your life as you live here on this earth, but but it's also something that prepares you for eternity. Living a life that is righteous, living a life that is good. I want to tie that together with a passage that is found in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 17. We'll get to Ruth in just a moment. In 1 Peter chapter 2, which is one of the verses we'll have in our Bible study in the next hour, the last verse in that text that we're going to be looking at, verse 17, calls upon us to honor all people. Love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. Now I want to just center your thoughts for a few moments on the phrase, honor all people. An individual who shows honor toward others is one who reveres or respects others. And that's something certainly that God expects of us. It's one of the primary aspects of being a person who loves as God loves us. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, you'll remember that love personified in that particular text tells us that love suffers long. Love is kind. Love does not behave in an unseemly way. When we look at the type of life that we're to live, it is one in which we are to be honorable. We're to be those kinds of individuals who respect others and who show our respect for others by the way we conduct ourselves, by the way we interact with them. That's something that is sadly lacking in the world in which we live. You are no doubt familiar, if you keep up with politics at all, that political discourse in our time is sadly lacking in honor. The partisanship that is there leads individuals to treat others, those with whom they disagree, in an unseemly way. And I have seen Christians get caught up in that kind of rancor, that kind of partisanship, to where they speak ill of others, they demean others just because of a disagreement. And that's not the way Christians are to live. We are to honor all people. You see from time to time that such disgraceful actions are found in a familial setting with regard to how fathers treat their kids and mothers treat their children, or how husbands treat their wives or wives treat their husbands. They do not show that respect and honor that they should for those in their family, perhaps even an extended family situation. When you're talking about those who should be able to gather around the table on Thanksgiving Day and enjoy one another's company, but because of disagreements, because of personalities, because of long-held situations and circumstances to where they've had something done that was displeasing to them, or they feel some slight or offense, that they cannot get along. And that's not the way it should be. And of course, we could go on and on and on with regard to the examples that we find. And unfortunately, again, it is something that we can be guilty of as Christians ourselves. And we need to be careful. We need to recognize just how important that very small and simple phrase is, that we're to honor all people. One of the things that I want to note, that when you go into the book of Ruth, and we're just going to spend a few moments reading through this book, certain sections, you're familiar with the story of the woman whose name was Naomi, who lost her husband, Elimelech. And you'll note that throughout the entirety of the book of Ruth, there are people who act honorably. They act the way God would have people act. And as a result, it is a beautiful story. If we talk about a beautiful set of relationships, you talk about Naomi with Ruth, you talk about Ruth with Boaz, you talk about the nobility of Boaz and the way he treats Ruth. These are things that obviously show honor. And so I think it serves as a good example for us, and I just wanted to spend a few times talking about it. So let's start off with the first five verses and just make note of the circumstance with which this book starts or begins. We're told that in the days when the judges ruled, a certain famine was in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of the wife was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. They went to the country of Moab, and they remained there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. So, first of all, they went for the purpose of escaping the famine that was in the land. Just note that, because it will become appropriate to remember it as we go on. So Elimelech, Naomi's husband, dies. She suffers the loss of her husband. Now, the two sons took wives of the women of Moab. So these are Moabite women. In other words, they intermarried with individuals from another country. The name of one was Orpah. The name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelt there for about 10 years. So we find that there was a rather lengthy period of time in which they were in Moab. Perhaps they stayed in Moab because this is where the wives were, and she was willing to dwell. Naomi was willing to dwell there. But Mahlon and Chilion also died. And so we're told the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Now we get to the point to where there is the end of the famine. Notice in verse 6 that Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. So she hears from afar that in the land of Canaan the famine was over, that God had blessed the people with food, and so she decided that she would go back to the land of promise. There was nothing there to keep her in that place. She had lost her husband and she had lost her sons. So she went out from the place where she was, her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go and return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. Now what she's saying basically is, "I don't have my sons anymore. You do not have your husbands anymore. Go back to the land of Moab where you can find a husband." Now we want to just note for a few moments how important having a husband was to women in that period of time. I realize that our society is far different in some ways, but it was what meant that a woman was fulfilled. Certainly that remains to be the case to a very great extent, but the attitudes that were there then are different than what they are today. And so she called upon her daughters to go back to Moab and said, "The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of your husband." So they turned to her and said in verse 10, "Surely we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" Verse 13, "Would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." And so you'll note that Naomi was mourning the loss of her husband, mourning the loss of her sons, but still there is honorableness in her words. In other words, the fact that even though she felt like she had been chastised by God, and that attribution to God of these things may or may not have been so. Job felt the same, and it is possible from time to time that God chastises his people. But the fact is, she had lost so much, and yet she remained honorable in the way in which she treated others. She wasn't selfish. She wasn't selfish, though she loved her daughters-in-law, would desire that they would remain with her, that she might have some comfort from them, but she knew that was not the right thing. And so she acted honorably toward them. Now, there are many things that we're going to see in this that basically teach the same point, but I do want to note that there is selflessness in honor. And that's something that I would like to emphasize, and I seem to more and more often be emphasizing this concept of being selfless, of recognizing that it's not all about you. And I'm saying you as in when you're thinking about yourself, and I would say me as I'm thinking about myself. Selfishness is, I would say, probably the inclination of most. and how individuals treat me, how things impact me, how the world is as it pertains to me. That's what motivates me. That's what interests me. That's what I act upon. And that's not the way that it's supposed to be. And honoring others is a preeminent responsibility of all who would be a child of God. And so here Naomi expresses this very clearly. Though it would be something that would be hurtful, something that would not benefit her, she called upon them to think for themselves and think of themselves. And they, in return, didn't want to. We will return with you to your people. But she said, no, that's not what should happen. Now, in verse 14, we are told they lifted up their voices, wept again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. This was a kiss of goodbye. But we're told that Ruth clung to her. And so Orpah went back to her people. Now, is there anything wrong with that? I would say, first of all, that Orpah, she acted honorably as well. There is absolutely nothing wrong with what Orpah did. She loved her mother-in-law. She was willing to go with her mother-in-law to a foreign land, one that she had never visited before. She was willing to, but when her mother-in-law insisted she not, then she did as she was told. And she went back to her mother's house. But not Ruth. This is an expression of love. And just that. Neither of these two circumstances was there anything done. In fact, it's difficult to find anywhere in the book of Ruth anything that was inappropriate in what was done. And we should not think less of Orpah because of the decision she made. That's what Naomi wanted her to do. But then there is this expression with regard to Ruth. Naomi in verse 15 said, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Now, there is one thing that we might object to. Return to her gods. But again, the days were different at that time. But then Ruth said this in verse 16. You're familiar with this beautiful poetic entreaty. She said, entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. You know why that text there is so well known? Because it's quoted in so many different weddings. This is not a romantic statement at all, although it would certainly fit and be appropriate. This is the attitude that a wife should have toward her husband and a husband should have toward his wife. But this is the sentiment of a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. And I would just very quickly say that it's important for us not to put too much in that phrase, your people shall be my people and your God my God, in the sense that Ruth has accepted at that point in time Jehovah God and rejected all idols, that her motivation was to find the one true God and stop serving the idols of the Moabites. I don't know that we can say that that's the case. This was an expression of love and devotion toward her mother-in-law. I think it's probable that as she went into the promised land and became a part of that people and that religion and faith, that she embraced it. But here was an honorable thing in her treatment of her mother-in-law. This is an indication of just how much someone is willing to sacrifice on their part in order for a blessing to be given to another. Naomi was willing to do it first in telling Ruth to go ahead and leave and I'll go back on my own by myself, having no one. But Ruth was unwilling to do that, and so she stayed with her. Verse 18, when Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. The two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. It happened that when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? She said, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, the Lord brought me home empty. We are told in verse 22 that Naomi returned with Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. So they're back in Bethlehem. The famine is over, but they are two widows. So what do you do? They didn't have a husband to care for them. They didn't have a patriarch, a head of a household. And Naomi still felt deeply the loss that she had suffered. And so she calls upon Naomi, the younger woman, to go and to get them some food. And the way in which that was done was that there was the tradition of allowing those, in fact, the requirement of allowing those who are in need, those who do not have food, to glean in the fields following the harvest. And so Ruth the Moabitess, in verse 2, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field, glean heads of grain, after him whose sight I may find favor." And she said, "Go, my daughter." And she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come upon the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Who's Elimelech? Well, that's Naomi's husband who had died. So Boaz came from Bethlehem. He said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." They answered him, "The Lord bless you." Now, I just want to note that one small statement so that you'll begin to have an understanding of the type of man Boaz was. He was the owner of the field. Those who are working in the field, the lowly wage earners, when he came to them and spoke with them, they liked him. And it's obvious as to why he was well liked by his employees, because he said, "The Lord be with you." And their response was, "The Lord bless you." And it's a very small thing. And I think that we can perhaps flesh it out a little bit as the type of man he was by further actions. But even that very beginning, that introduction of Boaz in the field, is an indication that he was a good man. And of course, he came upon Ruth as she was in that field. We're going to just go along a little ahead to verse 8. Boaz said to Ruth, this is in chapter 2, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Don't go to glean in another field, nor go from here. Stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you?" Again, a sign of nobility, honor. "When you are thirsty, go to the vessels, drink from what the young men have drawn." And she fell on her face and bowed down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes? You should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner." Now, there is a sense of familial responsibility. Extended family, but remember, we are told that Boaz was of the house of Elimelech, so he was related to Elimelech. Boaz was aware of who Ruth was. Notice verse 11. He said, "There has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you have left your father and your mother, the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." So what do we have here? Well, we have not only this idea of a man treating a woman honorably and the woman treating her mother-in-law honorably, but the result of the woman treating her mother-in-law as being honorable and kind is repaid with kindness. You heard about the idea of sowing and reaping. And it's not always the case. You can be kind and honorable toward others and not receive the same in return. But let it be understood that if you're kind and honorable toward those who are kind and honorable, then they will repay you with the same. That's why the Christian life is such a wonderful life. And that's why when we talk about the relationship that we sustain as Christians, as a family, here in this congregation, it should be such a wonderful thing. It should be an opportunity each time we come together to worship God, to be in the presence of individuals who are kind, who are thoughtful, who are selfless, and who treat you well, and you treat them well in return. That's the way it should be. That's what God expects of us. And that's what's so wonderful about this particular example, this particular lesson, because of just how kind they were to each other. And even the reason given by Boaz. Now, I would think that Boaz was a kind man anyway. The young women were allowed in his field. He treated his servants well. But he knew something special about Ruth, and he wanted to return to her favor. He wanted God's blessings to come upon her as a result of what she had done for Naomi. You'll notice in verse 15 of the text, when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves." In other words, make it to where she's just not getting the few leftovers, but let her just go in and get even the sheaves themselves. Don't reproach her. Let grain from the bundles fall purposefully. Be messy so that she'll be able to get more grain. And do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So she had a good day gleaning. Well, that's a wonderful thing. We're told in verse 20 of the text, when Naomi found out what had happened, she said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives." And so a plan was hatched. And again, nothing untoward, nothing inappropriate here, but knowing the kindness of Boaz and desiring so much that her daughter-in-law, who had treated her so well, would be blessed, then she indicated that Ruth should seek to be redeemed. The word redeemed is used in this particular place by Boaz. The idea of redemption is an idea of being purchased. The idea of the concept of reconcile or fulfillment through a price that is paid, and had reference to how a widow would be treated. And in this particular case, I want you to notice in verse 9. We'll take aside the time she told Naomi told Ruth to go lay down at the feet of Boaz. He was resting and he was asleep, and she was there, and he woke up in the middle of the night startled, and there was a woman lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." A simple reminder of responsibility. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is something that she did, and he said in response, not in any way offended, not in any way taken aback at any boldness on the part of Ruth on this occasion when she asked this of him. No, he understood what his responsibility was, and he was an honorable man. And so he said, "Blessed are you of the Lord." This is chapter 3 and verse 10. "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, and that you didn't go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Now, it's true. I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. "Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. If he doesn't want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you, as the Lord lives." As the Lord lives. That is somewhat an oath, a promise that is given, where the Lord's word or the Lord's name is inveighed to express just how sure it would be. Boaz was going to take care of Ruth. He's going to make sure that she gets what she is deserving of as a widow in his family. But again, he's indicating nobility. He did not in any way desire to be given an out in this regard. It wasn't it at all. But the law was expressed. It was not his duty. It was the duty of another. It would only fall upon him if the other was not willing. And so Boaz went down to the gate, chapter 4 and verse 1. He sat there. "Behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by." Now this is where maybe there is a character who is less than honorable. I'm not sure. It's not stated as such in so many words. But here is a man who was told by Boaz, "Come aside, friend, sit down here." He came aside and sat down. Boaz took 10 men of the elders of the city. So here are the witnesses as to what was going to happen. He said to the close relative, "Naomi has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech, and I thought to inform you saying, buy it back. Here is the concept of redemption. In the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of the people, if you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. So you're first in line to buy back that land. I'm second, and I'll take the land if you're not wanting it. And so the man said, I'll redeem it. Land. I'll buy that land. Then Boaz said, well, on the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. Okay, that's kind of a wrinkle that is thrown in. It's something that kind of makes it a different proposition for the man. Now, whether this is legitimate or not, I don't know, but the man said, I can't redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot. So now that Ruth is thrown in to the mix, he's not willing to do so. He has an excuse. It may be a legitimate reason. I don't know. Don't know enough about the customs of the day. But the custom of the day at that time, we are told, interestingly, in Israel, it was concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal, gave it to the other. This was the confirmation of Israel. So the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. And he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders, the people, you're witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. From the hand of Naomi. And so Boaz did what was right. It was right in every sense of the term. What was right with regard to Naomi, what was right with regard to Ruth, what was right with regard to his kinsmen. He did it exactly the way he was supposed to do it. Why? Because he was an honorable man. He was a good man. And he was a righteous man. End our time together. And I'm sorry, time's gotten away from me a little bit. Notice verse 13. Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. When he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. The woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative. May his name be famous in Israel, and may he be to you a restorer of life, a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. And Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, and became a nurse to him. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi. They called his name Obed. Obed. Recognize the name? He is the father of Jesse, who is the father of David. You go into the lineage of Jesus Christ, as found in Matthew, the first chapter, what you will find is in that lineage from Abraham to David and David to the Christ, Ruth is in that lineage. She was an honorable woman. Boaz, an honorable man. Naomi, honorable. It's a wonderful story about how people should treat each other. And it ends with this great and wonderful, wonderful gift that comes from God, that the Messiah came through the lineage of Boaz and Ruth. And all I can say by application of that is if we treat one another honorably, good people, we're righteous people, we're kind people, we live up to the standards that God has established, the way in which He wants us to be, to our families, to the culture of which we are a part, to our congregation, those of like precious faith, that in the end, we too will be rewarded by God. Honor all people. If you do, it's the best way to live your life. Because if you're nice to others, and you act righteously toward others, if there is any modicum of goodness in them, any bit of righteousness or kindness in them, they will return your kindness in kind. But whether they do or not, God will. And the reward is yours because of the honor that you show to others. I'm going to offer an invitation. Hope and pray this has benefited you. We'll probably have to start about 5 minutes late for the Bible class because I was long-winded. But if there is anyone who has a need to respond to the invitation at this time, we call upon you to do so. Would you come? While together we stand and while we sing.